Welcome to the Food Revolution Summit, where we explore how you can heal your body and your world with food. This is Ocean Robbins, and I am joined by my dad and colleague, John Robbins, in welcoming our guest, Nathan Runkel. Nathan is the founder and president of Mercy for Animals, which is one of the world's leading forces in the prevention of cruelty to farmed animals and in the promotion of compassionate food choices and policies. I myself founded a nonprofit organization at the age of 16, and I have a special appreciation for the fact that Nathan started Mercy for Animals when he was just 15. Under his leadership, this organization has conducted dozens of undercover investigations that have shifted the course of public opinion and helped to change food policy in the treatment of animals raised for food. Nathan has been interviewed in hundreds of television, radio, and newspaper outlets, including on ABC's World News Tonight, Nightline 2020, CNN, National Public Radio, and in USA Today, The New York Times, The Los Angeles Times, and the list goes on and on. So now, Nathan, my dad and I are so grateful to you for your bold leadership for a more compassionate world, and we're excited to have this time with you. And now, for this interview, I'm going to hand it over to my dad, John Robbins.
Well, thank you, Ocean, and thank you, Nathan, for being with us once again.
Yeah, my pleasure. Thanks for having me.
You know, I've been researching and writing about what goes on in factory farms and feedlots in the production of modern meat for more than 30 years. And the more I've learned, the more I have felt that the animals that we exploit for meat, dairy, and eggs are among the most abused, exploited, and ignored of all animals. Nathan, what is it that the meat industry wants to keep hidden that the public needs to know?
Yeah, well, I couldn't agree with you more. I think that farmed animals are definitely the most ignored, and their suffering is really kept out of sight and out of mind for most Americans, and that is intentional. I have been to dozens of factory farms and stood on the kill floors of slaughterhouses around the globe, and every single time that I enter these facilities, and every single time that our investigators do, they find horrific cruelty to animals. And this starts at birth. These animals are oftentimes separated from their families. They are mutilated without painkillers. They are crammed into cages where they oftentimes can't even turn around or extend their limbs. And of course, the end is oftentimes brutal and filled with fear and pain. So the meat industry is really working overtime to keep this abuse hidden from the public, who is by and large opposed to cruelty to animals. And what we see is a situation where current factory farm systems and practices have really deviated from what the majority of consumers find acceptable. And instead of bringing those practices to be more in line with consumer attitudes and expectations, the industry is seeking to stifle discussion and keep these practices hidden.
Well, I think that everyone who values compassion and truth owes a debt of gratitude to the teams of Mercy for Animals undercover investigators. And what strikes me is the hardship, the risks that these folks endure. They're wired with hidden cameras. They're doing this in order to pull back the curtains and expose what's really taking place. It can't be pleasant. It's got to be very traumatic work. To me, they are unsung heroes. Nathan, what can you tell us about how these investigations are carried out?
Yeah, absolutely. I agree with you. I believe that undercover investigators are the unsung heroes of the animal protection movement. If you look at the progress that is being made on this issue, whether it is pushing corporations to change their policies or laws being passed that provide greater protection for animals, or just the sea change in public attitudes, we can trace most of that back to an undercover investigator who, as you said, helped pull back the curtain, lift the veil of how the over 9 billion farmed animals in the United States are raised and killed every year. So your question is, How are these investigations carried out? Who are these investigators? How do they do it? These investigators are people who care deeply about animals. Many of them have been advocates in other areas before starting this work. They've been vegan for many years, but they decided to step outside of their comfort zone and their safety zone to roll up their sleeves and do the backbreaking and stomach-churning work of being an investigator. So these individuals, they go through rigorous training that we provide them. And as you said, they then will leave their friends, leave the comforts of their communities, and work for sometimes months on end inside of factory farms or slaughterhouses or hatcheries, feedlots, to document what takes place when the meat industry doesn't think that it's being watched. So these individuals are subjected to watching really the worst types of cruelty that you can imagine. They're exposed to the darkest side of humanity. And as you would expect, it does have an emotional impact. They oftentimes will suffer from PTSD type symptoms. This is something that is common, not only for undercover investigators, but for other individuals, many of whom take jobs at slaughterhouses out of desperation. We see a very high rate of what's called perpetration-induced post-traumatic stress disorder from individuals working inside of these facilities, which leads to everything from alcoholism and drug abuse to increased domestic violence. So this is something that's not only isolated to investigators with animal organizations, but is really systemic throughout the factory farm workforce, people who, again, take these jobs out of desperation, but are then exposed to just sheer brutality and horrors.
Whenever undercover video reveals workers engaging in malicious abuse of animals, the industry always says, oh, it's just a few bad apples. They try to point the finger at the individual. But it seems to me that there is something about factory farms that make them a breeding ground for dehumanization.
That's absolutely right. A large portion of the workforce on factory farms and in slaughterhouses are undocumented immigrants. They take these jobs out of desperation. They do the dirty work that few other people would do. And they are oftentimes victims themselves. They're victims of harsh working conditions. For example, in slaughterhouses, we see sky-high injury rates, carpal tunnel, in many operations, a turnover rate of nearly 100% every year. These are individuals that go in simply trying to make ends meet. And what they come out as is really underserved, underrepresented, exploited individuals who have been desensitized to horrible abuse. What we see is that many of these workers will go in and they'll simply try to do their job, but over time, they stop viewing these animals as individuals with needs and the ability to suffer, and they start to view them as production units, as commodities, as an obstacle to overcome just to get their work completed for the day. And when that becomes the norm, when someone's job is to slit the throat of thousands of animals a day, or to cut the beaks off of thousands of chickens, or cut the tails off of thousands of piglets, they really do become desensitized to the needs of these animals. And that can then lead to really malicious and sadistic abuse over the long haul. I have really come to view the workers in these operations as victims themselves. And I think that as a society, if we want to consider ourselves compassionate or evolved or ethical, we have to ask ourselves, not only from a standpoint of how animals are treated, but also how humans are treated inside of these facilities. If a slaughterhouse is so horrific that it leads to PTSD symptoms for those who work in it, not to mention the cruelty to the animals, I think we have to ask ourselves if these are really places that we want to support.
I often find it painful when the employees, who are the perpetrators, it's their hands that are doing it, but they are blamed by the owners. And recently, your undercover investigators were responsible for a video showing cows being abused by workers at Chilliwack Cattle Sales, the largest dairy farm in Canada. What struck me about this particular investigation is that it led to $300,000 in fines and a landmark ruling. Was this the first time any factory farm or its owners were handed an animal cruelty conviction for the actions of their employees?
Yeah, that's right. That's what really made this case so groundbreaking is whenever we do these investigations, we have a legal and moral obligation to provide the evidence to law enforcement. We always encourage law enforcement to hold the company accountable, but oftentimes it is the low-level workers who are directly engaged in the abuse who end up being prosecuted. It's a much easier case to win for prosecutors. But for us, we understand that this is not a matter of a few bad apples, a few employees going against company protocol, but it's really the system, it's the management, it's the oversight. And because of that, we do think it's just paramount that the corporations themselves, the owners themselves, be held accountable for this abuse, which oftentimes stems from lack of training, workers who are tasked with moving a great number of animals in a short amount of time, or animals that slip and fall because of faulty flooring or equipment. So this case, the Chilliwack case, was really groundbreaking in that regard. And we hope that it will help set a precedent for more factory farm owners to be held accountable for the actions of their employees.
You know, I keep thinking how without undercover investigations, a lot of sadistic and criminal acts of animal cruelty on factory farms would go undetected. They would go unaddressed. They would go unpunished. And there would be major threats to public health and the environment as well that would go unacknowledged. And it seems to me that these investigations are successes, they're triumphs, not just for mercy for animals and not even just for the animals involved, but for every single person who wants to be aware of the implications of their food choices. And I think also they're successes for every single one of us who wants a world with more kindness and less cruelty.
Absolutely. I think that investigations are really crucial in terms of sparking a public discussion about our treatment of farmed animals. Because as we said earlier, this abuse largely happens out of sight and out of mind. Most consumers don't want to support animals being treated in horrible ways, but they have very little knowledge or visibility into these facilities. So investigations really seek to start a rich discussion and dialogue and debate, and hopefully prompts meaningful action. I think for us to have really a fully functioning democracy, we must have an accurate flow of information. And the factory farm interests put forward so much misinformation and quite frankly, outright misrepresentations of how animals are treated. We're all familiar with the happy cow commercials that say that California milk comes from happy cows and features images of cows out in open pastures. And when children grow up, they go to McDonald's and they're told that hamburgers come from hamburger patches. I mean, the lies just go on and on with how the industry wants people to believe that farmed animals are treated. But as we know, the reality is far different. And when we have visibility and we can actually start to have a rigorous debate about if these conditions are appropriate, we can start to really see the needle moved away from this cruelty and towards more compassion.
Yes, to me, this work is about living in alignment with your values and making your life a statement of what lives in your heart. Now, different people will make different choices, but One thing's for sure, none of us can make informed choices that are in accord with our hearts unless we know what's actually taking place. And that's why I think that you, Nathan, and the courageous people you're working with are doing us all a service by lifting the veil and showing us what, in fact, is going on. To me, this work is not just about being against cruelty. It's about taking a stand for caring and respect for life.
Yeah, and I think that that is exactly the point. You know, we're not here to just be against cruelty. We're here to be for compassion and for love and empathy and inclusion. And while the investigations that we do focus on exposing this abuse, and we have campaigns to address, you know, the worst abuses faced by farm animals, at our core, you know, Mercy for Animals is really an organization that is based on being for compassion, for extending our circle of compassion beyond our friends and family and neighbors, and even beyond that of other humans, to include animals who are oftentimes look very different from us, who communicate with each other in very different ways, who live very different lives, but in the ways that matter are similar to us. They crave companionship and love and freedom. They fear cruelty. They seek to avoid oppression and confinement. And in that way, we are all united. And that really is the message of Mercy for Animals, is that how we treat animals says a whole heck of a lot about who we are as people. How we choose to treat those that are completely vulnerable and weak and at our mercy really says a lot about who we are and the lives that we want to live and the society that we want to create. And I think that if we're able to extend our circle of compassion to include farmed animals, not only do these animals benefit, but us as humans and our society also benefits from this compassion and empathy that we live with.
I could not agree with you more. There was an international outcry last year that included local and global protests and 4 million signatures. I think it broke a record on a change.org petition. And people were protesting a festival that was held in China at which 10,000 dogs were cooked and eaten. Now, in the U.S., we have laws preventing cruelty to animals, and if someone tried to eat 10,000 dogs here, they would be stopped or they would be imprisoned. But the laws that we have, almost all of them, all the laws we have against cruelty to animals, make an exemption for animals raised specifically for human consumption. So the result is that in this country, factory farm operations routinely treat pigs and cows and chickens with a level of abuse that if they did that to a dog or cat, they'd be imprisoned and it would be a felony. Nathan, if I may, I'd like to ask you a personal question. This is a question that I live with very deeply in myself. It's a question I think some of our listeners might be feeling right now. And it's a question about suffering. You've seen so much of it. How do you stay open and positive in the face of it?
Yeah, I think it's an important question, and one that anyone who is an advocate for animals, anyone who is close to witnessing this suffering must ask themselves. It took me a while to really come to terms with the fact that this is trauma-centered work that I'm doing, that most animal advocates are doing. We are constantly seeing images of animals suffering in the worst way possible. And of course, because we are compassionate, it affects us. So I think that we have to, as part of our duty as activists and advocates, have self-care be part of our lives. We have to understand that these are issues that will take many years, decades, generations to fully address. And we have to take a long-term view and perspective on these issues. We have to view our progress, not in years, but again, in generations. And to do that, we have to take care of ourselves so we can be in it for the long haul. And I think that burnout is such a problem within the animal movement and other movements as well, because when people learn about this cruelty, they want to do everything that they possibly can to stop it, which is noble and which is understandable. But oftentimes they do this at the expense of their own well-being, their own health, their own compassion for themselves. So for me, in terms of practice, that means a number of things. It means celebrating the successes that we have, whether it is a small success of someone simply opening themselves up to this notion and starting to adopt a more compassionate lifestyle, or celebrating larger successes, whether it's a change in a law or a corporate policy. So I think we do need to celebrate the successes as they come. But we also have to nurture ourselves. And for me, that means meditation, that means yoga, that means exercising, traveling, spending time with friends and family, laughing, really having a full and complete life. And that, I think, is the only way that we can not only stay in this movement for the long haul, but also remain authentic, remain connected to other people, and to remember why we're doing this work in the first place.
That's a beautiful answer. I appreciate that very much. When you mentioned celebrating our successes, I thought of last year, 2016, Massachusetts voters overwhelmingly passed a measure that will eventually prohibit farming methods that keep animals severely constrained for their entire lives, including the use of veal crates for baby calves, gestation crates for mother pigs, and battery cages for egg-laying hens. Now, 11 states had already passed bans on one or more of those practices, but the Massachusetts measure outlaws all three and then goes further. It also bars the sale of meat and eggs produced using those type of methods, even from animals that were farmed outside of the state. Nathan, when the Massachusetts measure passed, and it did so overwhelmingly, I thought of you. I thought of Mercy for Animals, and I thought of all your undercover investigators. I think your work does bear some responsibility for these developments and these successes, and I'm really grateful to you for that.
Thank you. Thank you. I appreciate you saying that. And I agree. Massachusetts is a huge success. You summarized it well, but the impact in Massachusetts will be felt throughout the nation. It is a powerful way for us to really provide a glimmer of hope in getting cows and pigs and chickens out of cages in large agricultural states like Iowa, for example, which does not have a ballot initiative process. And the legislature there is really in the pocket of large agriculture interests. So there's really no meaningful path forward in Iowa, for example, to ban the confinement of animals in these cages. But with more initiatives like the one in Massachusetts, where there are meaningful population centers that are consuming large quantities of animal products, we can start to force these changes into states that otherwise it's difficult for us to affect change. But when I started Mercy for Animals now over 17 years ago, the idea of a state banning the confinement of chickens in battery cages was really unheard of. And to see the progress that has been made over those 17 years to the point where a state not only bans the confinement of these animals, but also the sale of products from them, to me is really a telling sign of the success, how far we have come, and the power of the animal protection movement and driving change. So I think that anyone who at times feels helpless or hopeless regarding the treatment of farmed animals or gets bogged down with the enormity of it, it's helpful to stop and reflect and look at where we were 10, 20, or, you know, in your case, 30 years ago. And I think the trajectory of change is very clear. And to take that even further, if you look at the generational change that we're seeing on this issue, it is just absolutely clear. There's a study recently done that found that 12% of millennials identify as vegetarian. If you look at baby boomers, it was about 2%, Gen Xers 4%. So the trajectory in terms of generation to generation on animal protection and diet change is just absolutely clear. And they say a tipping point is about 10%. So we see millennials who are the future, who are coming into wealth, who are coming into power, who will be coming into political power soon. I think that that should give us all some real hope in terms of the changing views and landscapes. I mean, if we look at the changing views in terms of racism or sexism or homophobia, those were movements that largely progressed from one generation to the next. And I think that we are starting to see that for animals as well.
I think we are, and I'm very glad that we are. Some people becoming more aware of the cruelty involved in factory farm production of meats and dairy products and eggs look for more humanely grown or produced animal products. There is a Washington-based organization called the American Humane Association that calls itself the nation's voice for the protection of children and animals. And they stamp with gold, they have a gold seal that they provide, and some products are, food products are stamped with them, and with the words American Humane Certified. Now, your people went undercover recently and were employed at a humane certified poultry farm near Fresno, California. Can you tell us what they saw, what they filmed, what happened as a result, and does that question the integrity of the American Humane Association certified seal?
Absolutely. So, as you said, we had investigators, we had two investigators that worked at Foster Farm, one at a Foster Farm facilities, one at a slaughterhouse and one at a broiler chicken grow out facility. And Foster Farms, one of the largest poultry producers in the entire country, and pretty much all of their chicken is now stamped with this American Humane Certified label. So we wanted to see exactly what was taking place there. And I can tell you, we've done dozens and dozens of undercover investigations, many inside of broiler facilities, broiler chicken facilities. And what we found at Foster Farms was just as bad, if not worse, than all of the other broiler facilities and slaughterhouses that we've sent investigators into. There was really zero difference. These birds were still genetically bred to grow so large, so fast, that most of them, about 75% of them, have problems even walking by the time that they're sent to slaughter when they're only about 45 days old. Many of these birds suffer from crippling leg disorders. Many of them will die from heart attack because of the unnatural growth that they are subjected to. But on the factory farm, our investigator also witnessed baby chicks being thrown onto the ground, workers breaking their necks, just complete deprivation and cruelty. At the slaughterhouse where our investigator worked, we documented the typical cruel slaughter method used for chickens across the country. These birds come to the slaughterhouse in big trucks and cages. They're dumped out of these cages while they're still alive. And then workers work at a frantic pace to snap these live birds into shackles. Many of them will have broken bones because of the trauma, bruises, dislocated wings. But on top of that, these desensitized workers at this facility. We also found punching birds, ripping out their feathers while they're still alive, just horrible sadistic abuse. The birds then go through an electrified vat of water, which paralyzes them, and then they have their throat slit, oftentimes while fully conscious, and some will even go into scalding tanks while they're alive. So all of this is standard in the poultry industry, but as you said, this was all happening under an American Humane certified operation. So it's important to I think, discuss the American Humane Association, because the name sounds fantastic. Who would be against that mission? Unfortunately, the American Humane Association really acts more in the interest of animal abusers than animals themselves. And in many ways, this is an organization that seems to be co-opted by animal agriculture interests. They find themselves almost always on the opposite side of animal protection issues than pretty much every other animal protection organization in the country. And that's not just regarding farm animals, where their quote-unquote standards are the same as what the industry is already doing, and in some cases, below it. But it also extends to animals in entertainment. The American Humane Association is the organization behind the No Animals Harmed in the making of this film. Yet a closer look shows that animals have actually died, have nearly drowned, have been abused in films that bear the American Humane Association seal of approval. They have actively come out in support of using razor sharp metal tipped bull hooks on elephants used in circus and entertainment. These are torture devices that are used to beat the animals and break their spirits. It's something that has been outlawed in a number of cities across the country, yet the American Humane Association defends its practice. So what we found in this investigation, unfortunately, was just par for the course with AHA. And when this footage came out, which ultimately led to a criminal animal cruelty charge against one of the workers, the American Humane Association did not stop certifying this farm, did not speak out against it. In fact, they continue to certify foster farms, and to our knowledge, the same operations where we expose this abuse. So the message is buyer beware. If you are going to continue to eat animal products, I think that it is noble to at least be looking for animals that have a higher level of welfare. But it's important to really know what the labels mean, because there are so many labels that are thrown around that mean virtually nothing. So if you are going to eat these products, it's important that you look for the highest welfare standards and you know exactly what that means and how it's enforced, because oftentimes these labels are thrown around without much meaning or verification and are really just part of a humane washing movement that is capitalizing off of people's concern for animals, but really not leading to much better lives for the animals that are used.
Well, the gold seals that bear the words American Humane Certified, which we've just been talking about, clearly are deceptive.
Absolutely.
I want to talk with you a little bit about the green and white USDA certified organic seal. This seal has long meant that the animals were fed organically grown feed, but it has meant next to nothing, actually, although people assume otherwise, about the living conditions that the animals raised for organic meats, dairy products, and eggs have endured. Now, it looked like this would finally change when, in the very last days of the Obama administration, new federal rules were enacted that substantially strengthened animal welfare standards in the National Organic Program. But sadly, within hours of taking office, the Trump administration put a freeze on the new animal welfare rules for organic farms. And it seems that we cannot count on the Trump administration to enforce the new rules that would have improved the living conditions of animals raised for organic meats and dairy and eggs. Nathan, what's your view of the living conditions that now prevail in organic meat, dairy, and egg production facilities?
Yeah, well, as you said, the organic standard has really largely been confined to the feed these animals are fed and have meant very little, if anything, about the actual conditions the animals are raised in. So, you know, I think that the bottom line is that organic really doesn't mean what most people think it does from an animal welfare standpoint. And as you said, with the Trump administration and the freeze on the evolution of these standards, I think it's safe to assume that the way in which most animals that bear the organic labels are treated is likely not what many of us would hope for. And again, I think that means if you are going to eat animal products, you really should know the details of what the label means. Whole Foods has a 5-step program for animal products that they serve, and you can see right there what the different levels mean in terms of what practices are allowed and what practices are not allowed. This does not mean that we support or endorse these standards, but I think it is an example of more information for people to really take a look at if they're eating these products. But I think it's important for people to really think about their consumption of animal products. Certainly, in our view, the most compassionate choice that one can make is to step back from animal products, to move towards a plant-based diet. But people who don't feel that they are ready for that or interested in that, reducing our consumption of animal products is incredibly meaningful and powerful. If everyone went meatless just one day a week, if they participated in Meatless Monday, over 1 billion fewer animals would be raised and killed for food in our country. And I think regardless of who you talk to, a vegetarian or meat eater, anyone that really looks at the current situation of the standard American diet or the SAD diet would agree that we are vastly over-consuming animal products, even if we are to follow the USDA's food plate. So there seems to be really universal agreement. At the very least, we should be dramatically reducing our consumption of animal products, or more ideal in our view, just a complete move away from them.
Well, it can be painful for a lot of people to even think about the plight of animals. They don't want to see. They don't want to look. They don't want to know. And I can understand this to an extent, because it can really be very painful to open your eyes and your heart to what's done to animals for meat production. What do you say, Nathan, to people who shy away from watching your videos because they know how uncomfortable they'll feel if they do watch?
Yeah, well, I think that says a lot in and of itself. If we are too afraid to look, if we know at our core that the way in which these animals are treated is too violent or too abusive or too graphic for us to even bear witness to, I think that should prompt the question of, should we then support it? If a practice is so horrific that we can't even look at it, I would hope that we would then not want to support it by paying someone to carry out these practices, to carry out this abuse, to carry out this confinement of animals on our behalf. Because this is an issue that we cannot be neutral on. We all have to make food choices. So we cannot simply look away and feel that this is not an issue that we're going to take a position on. We all take a position on this issue every time that we sit down to eat, every time that we order something off of a menu or go and purchase a food product at the grocery store. So what I would say is, it really is our moral obligation as conscious consumers to be informed. And part of being informed is seeing what is really happening in the production of these meat, dairy, and egg products. And I do believe that compassionate people that want to live in line with their values, that want to live by the golden rule of treating others the way that we want to be treated, would agree that the way in which animals are abused on factory farms and slaughterhouses is not something that should be supported. Now, I think that people that have already made the journey away from supporting these industries and into plant-based foods, they get a free pass and they don't need to watch the graphic videos. But I think for everyone else, just the notion that they might be so disturbing that we don't want to bear witness should really give us pause to think about what that means in practice in terms of where we choose to give our money.
I thought of this issue when I read an article you wrote recently about something that took place, and I later looked into what happened. It was in Aranac County, Michigan. And what I found was that a fifth grade teacher, Michael Fields, a science teacher, presented a video that Mercy for Animals had shot undercover at a Tyson Foods factory farm to his students. Now, the video showed rampant animal abuse of pigs and piglets. For showing this video to his students, the teacher, who had been teaching for more than 20 years and who had an impeccable record, was pummeled with insults from parents. He was vilified for subjecting children to what they saw on the video. The school board president called the teacher's actions inexcusable. Members of the board said what he did was utterly and absolutely inappropriate. If the teacher hadn't agreed to submit a letter announcing his permanent resignation, he would have been fired. Instead, he received a six-day unpaid suspension and ongoing hostility from the community. Now, Nathan, we could discuss whether it was appropriate or not for this teacher to show these videos to children. We could discuss whether or not he deserved the punishment he received. But I have another question I want to talk with you about, and it's one I know you've raised yourself. There's no disputing that the abuses shown in that video, horrific though they are widespread and standard practices in the industry today. So the question I think we need to ask is this: what does it say about meat production in this country that we can't show children where their food comes from without risking traumatizing them?
I just couldn't agree with you more. This is the question that I posed before of, you know, if slaughterhouses are such vile places, not only for animals, but for the people that work there, that it leads to just vast numbers of workers coming out with post-traumatic stress disorder, what does that say about these operations? And I think the answer is pretty clear. This teacher would not have gotten into any trouble, or any other teacher for that matter, by taking his students to a crop farm to see apples being picked from trees or tomatoes off of vines. That's something that would be celebrated. We love being connected with that type of agriculture. It's something that is celebrated and romanticized for good reason. So if we celebrate taking children to see that type of food production, but we believe that showing them the production of animals for food is in fact so vile and so offensive that just by showing the images would be reprimanded, I think that that really speaks for itself. And to me, what being a vegan is, or adopting a plant-based diet and caring about farm animal protection, it's all about living in line with our values and not putting on blinders when it comes to our food choices. If we truly care about the state of our world, of our community, about the state of the planet that we leave for our children, if we truly care about the way that we treat others, and in this case, others being animals, then we cannot ignore our food choices. And again, we cannot be neutral on this issue. And I think that this case really highlights just the inherent disconnect that we oftentimes have in terms of food production.
Well, Nathan, along with you, I don't see the battle for the rights of animals as being only on behalf of animals. It's about us. It's about who we are becoming as human beings. There's a saying that when you teach a child not to step on a caterpillar, you do this not just for the caterpillar, you do it also for the child. And I want to thank you, Nathan. It's always a privilege to talk with you. It's always a privilege to learn about what you're doing. I appreciate your ongoing work. It's valiant work. It's work toward a world in which we nurture our bodies and minds and spirits with wholesome, healthy food that is kind to animals and that is sustainable for our planet. And those are goals I think we all have at some level in our hearts and minds. And of course, I want to thank you very much for being with us today.
Thanks so much for having me. It was a pleasure.
We've been talking with Nathan Runkle, founder and president of Mercy for Animals and one of the world's leading advocates for a humane world. Nathan, there is such a vast gap today between everyday policy and what most human beings actually want when it comes to the treatment of animals. I think that your work is pivotal, it's profound, and it's so deeply needed. You and the whole team at Mercy for Animals are making a difference for billions of animals and for our very humanity itself. We want to thank you for your courage, for your wise leadership, and for your partnership in the food revolution.
Thank you so much. I appreciate it.
This concludes our interview, but our work is just getting started. If you feel excited by what you just heard and you want to share it with other people in your life, if you want permanent access to 24 more amazing presentations and transcripts, then check this out. You can get a download and a transcript of the entire Food Revolution Summit, plus a huge collection of bonus ebooks, courses, trainings, recipes, and videos. And this empowerment package is available for a huge 50% discount between now and the end of the summit. For more information, please visit foodrevolution.org/empowerment. Again, that's foodrevolution.org/empowerment. Thank you so much for joining us in the Food Revolution.